Absolutely. Yeah. Pre or post, even, right? So to get muscle recruitment, you can do it pre and just do a couple short bouts, or to decompress afterwards, you know, you can do kind of longer bouts and just sort of relaxedly go through it.
Welcome to Barbell Strohugged. I'm Mike Butzer here with Doug Larson and Kenny Kane. And we're up here at Innovative Results, and we're hanging out with the founder, Aaron Guyette. He's a master coach for Onnit's Battle Ropes. And we're going to get into energy systems, metabolic pathways, and you use the battle ropes to teach that and train that.
Correct.
Yeah, and so that's much different than what we normally encounter with CrossFit. We think about metabolic pathways, and we think about Metcons.
Correct.
And or we might think about an Aerodyne,
yeah,
or something,
oh, yeah,
like that.
Yeah.
And usually I'm using different tools if I'm wanting to work one pathway versus another.
Mm-hmm.
And it sounds like you're using the battle ropes to train everything.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think with the battle ropes, once you understand the principles of the metabolic pathways, then you can carry that into any tool. You can go back to your barbell. You can go back to a kettlebell. You can go to an Aerodyne. And now you know how to program for a lactic power, or for lactic, which is, you know, our strength component, or the aerobic side of it. And that's the beauty of the battle ropes, is it forces you to come away from the normal, I think, preconceived notion of force, which is either calisthenics, where I'm moving my body and I'm being explosive or not explosive and just running whatever with body weight, or an amplification of gravity, which is kettlebell or barbell or mace or steel club or any of the other tools that we use at any or most gyms. So we tend to kind of pigeonhole ourselves or paint ourselves into a corner, like this is the only way to amplify force to get enough force load to work this particular metabolic pathway. But once, if you use a rope and you're able to get into power or the alactic metabolic pathway, or you're able to get into strength, or you're able to work aerobic, well, now you realize, oh, force is force is force. It doesn't matter which tool I'm using. If I can get to it with a battle rope, well, now I kind of understand the concepts of force and using the force with any other tool, whether it's an amplification of gravity or not.
I think it's cool to use a single tool to do all that, because you're actually focusing on the energy system and
exactly,
not so much worried about this tool's for this or that. And I see where it can shore up any confusion.
Yeah.
Before we go any further, can you tell us about your fitness career? What got you to the point where you're working with battle ropes?
Yeah, absolutely. So, first I started with the Marine Corps, just being really into fitness in high school, and then kind of getting smashed in the Marine Corps. But realizing that that's not the way to build the best bodies, whether it's aesthetically or for performance, for athletes, you can't just smash yourself into the ground and then pick yourself back up and smash yourself in the ground. Do that consistently and create a good body. So I got interested in just movement and lifting weights and, whether it was, for me at that point, it was dumbbells, barbells, you know, and sort of your traditional bodybuilding and powerlifting components. I wanted to get huge and strong because I was scrawny because I ran too much and humped too much weight or did too many rucks in the Marine Corps. So I wanted to get big and strong and started to learn about that and then got into fitness at a LA Fitness. I started, you know, just doing basic personal training at a LA Fitness. And then from that point, I realized I think I can do this better. So kind of ventured off onto my own, started Innovative Results in August of 2005, and realized that there's way more than just bodybuilding. There's way more than just powerlifting out there, and just immersed myself. And the more I learned, the more I realized I didn't know. And that's still the case today. I keep learning more and realize, dang, man, there's so much that I don't know. And not too long ago, we were actually on the other side of this building, Innovative Results, and we hosted John Brookfield, who is really like the guy that brought battle ropes into the fitness industry, and got a level one certification from him, level two certification from him, and then got an opportunity with Onnit Academy because I had been doing it for almost a decade, doing ropes, battle ropes for almost a decade. They said, hey, you wanna write our curriculum and teach our certification? And I said, oh, let me call John Brookfield and make sure that's okay. Called him, emailed back and forth, and basically he gave me the Ominous Dominus. So, boom, here I am with great opportunity to teach metabolic pathways, force through a tool that I've been using for almost a decade to help athletes, help special ops guys, help military guys, and help just average Janes and Joes get better with their body, better at what they do, better movement.
Yeah, I think a lot of times we think about strength and conditioning, and we just think about conditioning as the time when you're breathing hard.
Yeah.
could you break down the different types of conditioning that exist?
Yeah, I mean,
why it's important too that we would want to break this up.
Yeah. So if we're let's say I'm training a special ops guy, or even a CrossFit guy, like I know that dude needs an equal amount of all his metabolic pathways, because the special ops guy, he's going to, you know, potentially have to hike or hump or walk or run for a significant period of time, or fight maybe in a battle for a significant period of time. So that's aerobic, right? That's being able to just continue to do movement for long periods of time. And it's not your high level, high intensity movement, but at some point, if somebody comes up to him and tries to take him down, he's going to need to be explosive as he can be at that time, to pick him up, put him down, wrap him up, do whatever he has to do. So he's going to need alactic or power, explosive power as well. So I can condition explosive power, or the alactic metabolic pathway, that chemical interchange in our body that is able to nervously recruit as much muscle, contract those muscles explosively to take that guy down in the way in which he decides to do it, but then be able to go back to, okay, now the guy's wrapped up, he's zip tied on the floor, now we got to pick him up and we got to carry him because our vehicle broke down or whatever, we got to carry him 8 miles back to our forward base, or forward observation base, or our assembly, or whatever it is, right? So now I need aerobic capacity again. So you can condition alactic, which is the power, you can condition lactic, which is that strength, and you can condition the aerobic, or the endurance part of any person, any athlete. Average Janes and Joes need explosive power too. I mean, you know, little Lily runs out into the street, mom needs to be able to shoot out there as fast as possible, pick her up and get her out of the road. So you want every single person to at least have a little bit of that access. But then as a coach, what I'm looking for is, hey, what is your point B? What are you trying to get better at? If you're, you know, a football player, or you're whatever, if I can understand that from a metabolic conditioning or metabolic pathway standpoint, now I know what I can start working on throughout his or her training regimen and training programs, training cycle, up to whatever it is that they're going to work toward, right?
So this gym's a little bit – not a little bit, it's a lot unique compared to like your standard CrossFit gym or strength conditioning facility. Like, it's almost the opposite in the sense that, you know, you have a matted kind of weight room type area over there. That's a very small percentage of the gym. And then the rest of the gym is mostly open space and turf.
Yep.
Whereas most other gyms that I've been to, if I'm to stereotype them, they have mostly weight room space and then like a little bit of turf. So it's kind of the opposite. Like, how did you choose to structure this gym like this?
I think there's so much to explore in human movement, and we tend to just see the tip of the iceberg in terms of human movement when we go and train strength and conditioning, or we go to, whether it's a CrossFit gym or you know, a big box type corporate space, or, you know, or another boutique fitness gym. We think of strength and conditioning as weights, and, you know, we've sort of got that preconceived notion. So this forces you to see it from a different perspective. Let's explore this first, and then we can add some other tools and components. So by making it open, it just kind of frees you up mentally to jump into a new kind of paradigm or a new way of thinking about movement and about strength and conditioning. Mm-hmm. And it's also really incredible to host events because a lot of times events need just open space. So if you're peering around weight equipment and stuff like that to try to see the presenter, it's kind of difficult. So also from a business standpoint and hosting events, it works really well too. But really, traditionally, that was actually my former business partner, Corey Beasley, and I, that was what we kind of wanted. We wanted to force people into a new paradigm, see this as a fitness playground more than, a box to get, to lift up heavy weights and then put them down. We do want to do that too, and that's really important in everybody's programming, right? If I'm trying to work lactic metabolic training or metabolic conditioning, I that's a great and easy way, and it's the tried and true method that's been pervasive in the industry for a long time. So I can work it that way, and so we do. But this just forces that mindset. It just opens it up, makes it totally different.
Can we just go two steps back, if you don't mind, Aaron, and if I can call you Aaron.
Oh, I like that. Yeah.
And just to help some of our viewers and listeners get clarity on the energy systems, because I think a lot of the people that follow this show think of energy systems in the way that some textbooks often refer to them, or the CrossFit certifications refer to them. So a lot of CrossFitters sort of understand it as you've got this oxidative, this longer one.
Correct.
Then you got a glycolytic, then you got a phosphagenic. And I know that there's some overlapping similarities.
Correct.
But can you just clarify that, just so that we are clear on sort of language understanding moving forward? Because I'd like to hear your description of that.
Yeah. The phosphagenic, right, ATP-CP interchange happening. That's your power, mm-hmm. right? Here's the thing, you call it phosphagenic, you call it the glycolytic cycle, right, which is the lactic
right.
that I'm referring
right.
to, or strength, and that's really when you feel the pump, right? Like that's what a lot of bodybuilders are going after. If you're trying to create hypertrophy for your athlete, that's what you're going after. And then oxidative, that aerobic, right, with oxygen, movement with the use of oxygen. When your body, like, we don't get to tell, like, hey, bicep, you're gonna use the ATP-CP. Like, we don't get to decide that. Our body sort of naturally decides that stuff. So when I do something explosive, I still might be using some of my oxidative or aerobic or endurance musculature, and I might be using some of the glycolytic cycle, right, or glycolysis or lactic, right, that I was referring to. But if it's a massive movement, because of the way our body recruits, right? At first, we have to learn how to recruit that much muscle and move it all at the same time. So if I pick up this, I kind of know already what that weighs like. But if I try to pick up, the turf or you or
I'm 400 pounds. So
yeah. So if I try to pick up 400 pounds,
clearly solid
Kenny,
muscle.
Just jacked.
At first, I might be like, oh, whoa, I can't really move that. So then the body naturally, nervous system, recruits more, tries to fire more muscles, more and more and more and more and more. And before you know it, now I'm tapping into that ATP-CP in order to actually create that movement. I'm using as many muscle fibers as my body can create. So to get effective at it, you need to do it more than once, right?
So if I got it right, then what you were doing is understanding how this works physiologically, but then people coming off the street don't necessarily know that. And then you're using the single modality of the battle ropes to, you go, we got this big open space, grab a rope. We're going to do this for a short amount of time. We're going to do it for a long amount of time.
Yeah.
And then we're going to do it somewhere in the middle. And you're going to understand how those things feel differently. And
exactly.
Then from there, now you've got a platform to understand what the hell me, Aaron, as your coach, is going to tell you what to do.
Absolutely.
And you're going to get stronger. And okay, copy.
Well, and so then the beauty of the rope, right, is if I have a maximum amount of muscle recruitment, if I'm trying to tap into that ATP-CP, it might take me a couple of sets to really get that, right, maximum
right.
Force production.
Right.
But the cool part with the rope, I will see the rope move bigger and bigger
right.
and further and further. And so I can set myself away or closer to that anchor to now see how much force am I generating, right? Mm-hmm. And then now as a coach, I can immediately change the dynamic or immediately change the variables to get more or less out of my athlete. Okay, oh, you're doing too much. We're trying to hit lactic, so settle it down a little bit. We don't need the wave to go that far. We don't need the wave that big. Right. Let's do this instead. You know, or
it's funny that you say that. Periodically, when I've got clients training with battle ropes, and just that wave, you know, I'll either say, you know, you need to do X amount of swings or reps on the ropes, and then, you know, the first set it's like coiling all the way to the thing, and by the fifth set it's like,
That's a good sound effect.
Yeah. Well, just sort of like, and they're like, it's still a rep. I'm like, no, not so much. But it's, you know, our qualifications for reps and other things a little bit easier. But, you know, I think it's such I love it as a tool. I think it's sort of underused right now in the space.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and it's really, really easy to coach.
Yeah.
Right? You can if you screw it up, your wave just looks like crap. That's it.
Right.
You're not jacking yourself up. If it's too much, you just let go.
Is that one of the reasons why you chose to use the ropes? Because you felt like maybe some of the other things used were, you know, jacking people up?
Actually, I first chose to do the ropes because...
Because you were a beat-up Marine?
Yeah, because I was beat-up. No, it was actually because John Brookfield made it look... If you look at him, he's like the nicest older gentleman that you can see. I mean, he wears sweats. He wears a T-shirt. You know, he has a little bit of extra cushion, and you wouldn't think anything of him. He holds some of the like greatest feats of strength in America, in the world, right? Like ripping decks of cards, like 50 in a minute. He's pulling semi trucks. He's bending like steel. Yeah. Right. He's bending steel and putting it into, you know, mail boxes, or mailer boxes or whatever. The guy's incredible. And so I watched him on the ropes. Not only is he incredible with strength, but then he goes forever. And he's just talking the whole time. Like, oh, yeah, and this is what, you know, we're just kind of creating waves. And, yep, here we go. Then you get up to it, and you do it, and it's like the sound effect that you made. And you just feel pathetic. And so I was like, okay, I don't want to be pathetic. I want to be like that guy. Yeah. What do I got to do? And so I just kind of, you know, dove in head first. So that's originally. But then I realized – so when you use the rope, it's purely concentric, right? There's not a whole lot of eccentric. So you want something in season that's going to keep you from getting sore but still maximize your performance. Ropes are your game, right? That's your deal. It's purely concentric. It's like doing the concentric Olympic lift or whatever and then just dropping the load.
Yeah.
It's the same thing but with a rope. The chance for injury is severely decreased, right? There's not a whole lot of impact happening. Right, because it's a wave, and it's not like, you know, you're not pounding. Obviously, if you jump or something like that, then you're gonna have to deal with the impacts of that. But otherwise, you can create a ton of explosive power with a really thick and really long rope.
Okay, that was your chance.
No, I teed it up.
He paused. He did the whole thing. Dude.
But
before
it was like the target was way too easy.
That and we opened the show. I don't know if this was recorded, but Mike opened the show, or as we started recording, ketones in your butt. And so
I wasn't recording that.
I actually jumped three spaces from that to getting ketones in the butt.
You passed the brain butt blood barrier.
The butt brain barrier.
It's an important barrier to cross every once in a while with either coffee or ketones.
This is an essential. Oh. It's like an essential amino acid. It's like you don't have a full protein if you don't do that.
There's one missing.
You don't have a full life if this doesn't happen.
So what were you saying about thick, juicy, plump, juicy, plump,
long and thick,
this throbbing rope. Okay.
We just went 50 shades of grayer.
Yeah.
I think, right there.
I can. This just came up. Since we just derailed for a moment, let's go full derail.
Okay,
I was just recalling the story when I put my index finger into a car door, watched it close, and went, that's not good, and then unlocked the car, and then went to Kaiser, which was my medical provider at the time. Now, while there, the nurse wasn't very pleased with my ability to not tolerate pain, And he kept saying things like, well, you shouldn't be able to feel your finger. And I'm like, I do. And I would like some more stuff in there because it's a sensitive area, a lot of nerves. And anyway, he started to come up with a couple of stories of people that had come into Kaiser, one of which was an example of a couple. The fella in the couple was about 50. The girl in the couple was in her mid-20s. They thought it would be a good idea for her to take plaster of Paris and mold it around his erect penis while he was excited. Well, there was a point at which the blood came out of the penis. However, the plaster of Paris had dried at that point. So he had to come to the emergency room for an emergency circumcision under local anesthesia to help get all the plaster of Paris off. Yeah, soak that up. Anyway, back to thick, veiny ropes and training. A mic just went into a spot. We went full derail, and then you guys went, Kenny, you missed one, but I feel like
You made up for it. It takes a lot to make me speechless. Good job.
We're under the naive assumption that was done sober.
Right.
Oh, yeah.
I love that was the idea at some point, though. Baby, who has plaster of Paris? unless you're a sixth grader making a science experiment.
I grew up with that shit.
Yeah, but maybe they just were inspired by the kids, and maybe there was some other stuff involved, but...
Honey, yeah. I brought home plaster of Paris. You know what that means. No, I don't know what that means. Walk me through this. I'm a little concerned right now.
Oh, man.
I'll be doing some research on the internet tonight.
Yes, I know. Unfortunately, I will too. Now I have to find out more about
this. Was the 90s, right before the information superhighway, as it used to be called in the early 90s, was even a thing, really, that people knew about. So
massive amounts of power. We went full derail, so we can easily jump into another another subject.
I think it might be a good idea to break here and come back. I actually want to find out what we should do if we want to get started with the ropes.
Yeah.
So I've seen the ropes. I've played around with them, but I know about two moves, and I don't even know if I'm doing it right.
No, I think all of Instagram knows about two moves, so we're right on track. This is normal.
Perfect.
All
right, well, let's take a break, and we'll get back.
Okay, perfect.
Hey, folks, Mike Bledsoe here, and I want to let you know that on the video version, we spend about 5-10 minutes with Aaron, and he teaches us how to use the ropes in all the different ways that we can get into it. So I highly recommend going and watching that, then coming back here and listening to the rest of this show. Thanks for joining us.
I call that an estrogen headlock.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
That's what that is.
That's it.
That's all you need.
I'm tapping. Yeah.
All right. If I want to get started in battle ropes, what do I do to get started?
So I think understanding the relationship between you and the anchor is probably the most important thing. If you go anchored, if you go unanchored, then that's a whole different paradigm. It's a whole different thing. But
so you're tying the battle rope to something, or you're looping it around something.
Yeah, whether it's looped around and doubled, right, or you're tying it off. Make sure you tie it off well. I've seen some and heard of some gnarly incidences where I just make a bunch of knots, and then they were doing some crazy power stuff and then broke their tailbone or whatever. So
broke their tailbone.
They were like kind of pulling back on it and creating a bunch of waves and then fell back, broke their tailbone. So
you can get injured doing anything.
Yeah, anything, right? I'm like, true. This is crazy. Yeah.
So, right. Well, we now know, you know, plaster of Paris on the penis and battle ropes put you in the ER.
Correct. Yeah, so figure eight, we use a figure eight knot, which is like easy to untie. You can do everything you want. You can try to pull it off the anchor with a truck and still untie that knot. So that's kind of a cool, like, hey, getting started. If you're going to do a single rope, tying it off correctly is, I think, a great start. Something that most people don't think about. And then I think understanding that you can do waves in any direction and you can do circles as well. So that relationship between the anchor and the human or between the anchor and the client or the coach or whatever, right?
Mostly humans.
Yeah, mostly. some dogs. Yeah. We have a couple of dogs we can tie up. Yeah.
And periodic marsupial. Yeah. I saw a kangaroo training in your gym. It was amazing.
So if understanding that relationship, so we'll, a lot of times we'll go static first. So pull it tight. And then you feel not only obviously everybody's contending with gravity in the ground. Everybody deals with that. We like that. That's what helps us move well. Without gravity, that would suck. Force production would be nil. But then now you have a new force to contend with, and it's the anchor and the rope force. And so that static relationship is what you try to create when you create your waves, right? If the wave doesn't go all the way to the end, it doesn't really create that static connection between the anchor and the person that's creating whatever sort of wave or oscillation or frequency or stimulation on the rope. So we try to recreate that. And then that gives us kind of our baseline for do I want to create more power, more force production, or less and go longer. And then now I start to adjust my variables to really train the metabolic pathways. And then I can have them go in the frontal plane, so they're lateral, going side to side. And then they're obviously using a lot of transverse when they're doing that. I think transverse is one of the most undertrained and most needed movement patterns of the human body. 90% to 100% of human movement is based off of rotation.
What's up?
So, yeah. So if we're not training it, what's, you know.
Well, I mean, I've had this issue, which is that was an undertrained thing for me, and then it ends up resulting in injury over time.
Correct.
And now you're not in the sport long enough.
Yeah.
As long as you could have been.
Yeah, exactly.
So now, like a large part of my training is that. It's not always as sexy.
No.
It's as snatching.
Yeah, but, you snatch like really 300 pounds, like that's going to look cooler than me, you know, moving a 2-inch, 50-foot rope back and forth side to side for 5 minutes or even 10 seconds.
Yeah,
right?
So this could be a good tool to add in to complement whatever you're doing.
Absolutely, yeah. Pre or post even, right? So to get muscle recruitment, you could do it pre. And just do a couple short bouts, or to decompress afterwards, you know, you can do kind of longer bouts and just sort of relaxedly go through it. And the cool part is it still does look kind of sexy. I mean, that's why it's so popular on Instagram, that slow-mo alternating wave, right?
Yeah.
Where two waves are coming down. I mean, that looks cool. Maybe not as cool as 300 pounds overhead, but it still looks super rad. And so, yeah, you can train in all the different planes of motion that we can generate. We can use more joints. So actually creating a little bit more or a little bit better nervous communication from central nervous system to peripheral, right, or the PNS, CNS-PNS connection, right? And then even just understanding our body proprioceptively, understanding how to, you know, throw a hook better, right? You can just train a lateral wave to get that heel coming out, you know, rotating, axial rotation of the femur, rotation of the hip, coming through with the torso and then coming through with the arm, right, which is every power movement that we do, whether it's a kick or a punch or a throw or whatever, right? So we can just kind of train those rhythmically and train them both symmetrically. So I want to create the same amount of power this way and the same amount of power or force production this way, force production that way. And so I think then you understand those kind of principles, right? Gravity in the ground, the relationship with the rope to the anchor, and then now I can move it a bunch of different ways, and I want to create that wave or that oscillation to go all the way to the anchor. And now it's just adjusting variables to get what you want from your clients or from yourself.
Yeah, and that's a great compliment to the majority of training that with the people that we generally hang out with, you know, weightlifters, CrossFitters, powerlifters. It's the training in a phone booth, up, down, sagittal plane the whole time.
Yep.
They don't really do a lot of transverse plane work. They don't
Correct.
Do a lot of throwing. They don't do a lot of punching, kicking. Or just any transverse work done in the gym. So the ropes are a great complement to a kind of a normal training program.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, any time you overuse a particular movement pattern, you're going to see issues with that unless you can decompress it, unless you can get it to relax and come out. So then your shoulder works like a shoulder, not like a snatch creator, right? Or a jerk creator, right? Which is a lot of times that's what I think.
What's your talent? I create snatches.
I create jerks.
Be nice to me.
And snatches.
I have things of value. really, really big ones.
The bigger, the better.
So we talk a lot about ropes, which are all, of course, super cool. You have lots of interesting implements here, though. Like you got the pec boards over there. You got VersaClimbers. You got sandbags. You got punching bags. You got a kind of a monkey bar setup over here. Parallel bars. Like this is just a unique spot. Like how do you implement all these other tools into your training programs?
I think with education, with responsibility, right, steward them well. A lot of times we'll get a new coach, and because they see all of these cool things, if we give them an opportunity to write some programming, what we end up seeing is like this hodgepodge of all sorts of crap. and it's like, okay, huh. So but what are you accomplishing? What is the goal? So I think we first think about what is the point B that the client is striving for, or I'm striving for, or we're trying to create in this class or this group setting. Are we trying to build lean body mass? Are we trying to lose body fat? Are we trying to build aerobic capacity? Or are we trying to, you know, recruit as much muscle as possible and really increase that force production? What is it? And then in what movement patterns? And then, okay, so what might be the best tool that's going to eliminate the most risk? And we kind of start there, and then as the client or the people get a little bit more technically sound, okay, then we might now introduce some more or some different tools. So I'm not going to immediately have them doing Mace 360s if they can't just do a proper squat, or if they don't have good glenohumeral range of motion in their shoulder, right? Mm-hmm. So how can I then build that first with maybe a different tool? So, you know, maybe I'll get them over on the kettlebell and have them work some basic stuff on the kettlebell or on the rope to sort of open up that range, and then probably doing a lot of body weight, just whether it's flow type stuff or decompressive type stuff at the end, or open chain or closed chain mobility at the beginning to try to get as much as I can from that. And then, okay, now I'll implement this. Now we can, okay, dabble in each thing, but I think smartly is probably the best answer. Mm-hmm. Because there's so much and you just want to use it all. There's some things here are going to have a lot more risk associated with them, whereas other things are going to have a lot less risk. Mm-hmm. But if you do a slow and steady approach, it's going to mitigate a lot of the risk as you go along and as you program more and more and more for the client or the class.
Yeah. How much do you encourage your clients to just come in and just play? Like you guys have the innovative results. It says the fitness playground. Mm-hmm. Like that's, you know, I come in here and I look around and I don't think I'm going to follow like a structured workout plan today. I think, oh, I'm just going to come in here and goof around and play the whole day. And eventually, you know, I wouldn't do that every single day necessarily. But like when I walk in here today, I'm not thinking I'm like going to go, you know, do 5x5 back squats. I'm going to come in here and just play.
Yeah.
You know, how much do you encourage your clients to do that, like on their day off or what have you?
Yeah, we actually program that in a lot mm-hmm. of times. Actually, the progression that I just wrote for like our small group and classes, I wrote it based around play. And I wanted to make sure that people were playing to attain power in their lower body and upper body, play to attain strength in their lower body and upper body, and then full body, and then play to attain aerobic capacity in their lower body and upper body. That was the whole progression. That was what it was written for. It was play to discover my body and discover movement. And then in the midst of that, you're going to be coached on, okay, what are some issues that I'm seeing? What are some asymmetries? What are some things that we're going to want to deal with in our, you know, pre-mobility, open chain or closed chain mobility at the beginning, or decompression at the end, or maybe some stuff that you're going to want to do afterwards or on other days where when you come in and you play, let's play this way so that you can open up this hip or create more internal rotation of your femur in the hip or whatever it might be. So, yeah, we highly encourage that. We think that's a great way. That's how we learned, right, as kids, at least me, right? I loved recess. Recess was my favorite class. I hated all the other classes. Went outside and just learned how to move my body, swung around on bars, did all, you know, and so then I ended up being a decent athlete. Well, it wasn't because my dad was like drilling me in the backyard. It was because I was playing as much as I possibly could, creating proprioception incidentally, right? Creating body awareness, body control incidentally. And really body awareness, body control is going to be the most significant two things that are going to reduce injury and increase performance. Right.
Yeah, and as adults, most adults don't play at all.
No.
At some point, you stop playing, or
yeah.
I think a lot of kids now just never play in the first place,
yeah.
which
sad.
Is really sad. How do you get somebody – so you say you program play, so it's like you create like yeah. a container for it, but yeah. as an adult, if I haven't played in 20 years – You just kind of see people get in here and get nervous, like, oh fuck, I don't know what to do.
Yeah. Of course, we every single thing that we program, we have five levels down and five levels up. So when you see those, like that apprehension or that nervousness, we're immediately, you know, going back, regressing whatever it is that we're doing. So we'll do something called knife fighting. And actually, over there we got these little foam sticks or whatever. You want to talk about learning body awareness, body control? That's a incredible way of doing it. Mm-hmm. And but if they're afraid of, you know, moving around too much, then we'll probably just have them it becomes a little bit more regimented, a little bit more structured, but it's like, okay, you're just going to do some basic locomotive type movements. You're going to run forward, but you're going to put your toes in, then you're going to run forward and you're going to put your toes out, like some real basic stuff that maybe you and I might be like, oh, that's easy, I can do that. But for them, that's hard. Like, so jumping around is going to be maybe a little bit too much for them at that time. But every coach has to be aware of that and has to kind of be on the lookout for that, and then pull them aside and be like, hey, this is okay. Everybody starts somewhere, and you're going to jump into this, you know, before you even realize it. I'm sure, you know, in a week or 2 weeks, you're going to be already, you know, doing this, but let's just learn our body a little bit right now because you seem a little uncertain.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I also see you have a lot of strongman implements here as well. You got stones and you know, farmer's handles and whatnot.
Yeah.
I know you have a strength background. You compete in kettlebell competitions and whatnot. Mm-hmm. Like how much
not
like
just
raw
competes. He's the national champ.
National champ. That's right.
He competes against the Russians, man.
Yeah.
Guy's named Ivan.
Yeah.
How much like pure raw strength training do you guys do? Like heavy stuff.
So it's probably about 5% of our clients. You know, do that. We have something that we call active performance where, you know, I'll actually write programming and coach people in specifically that. It's like, it's the guys that you have to actually try out to make that group setting, right, to make that class. So we need to know that you have a basic amount of power, a basic amount of strength, a basic amount of aerobic capacity, and you have a basic amount of mobility and range, and you don't have, you know, all these crazy injuries, maybe a couple niggles here and there. And then we'll do tire flipping or, Atlas stone lifting, because they've already kind of created that basic level strength. Because if you don't have that and you go and try to lift a stone, I mean, you have to basically come out of form in order to lift those out of normal deadlift form, right? You're not like straight back. You have to curve your back. It's crazy, right? So, it's a very small amount, but we love having it. It's cool to look at. It's cool visually. Most of our clientele is not doing it. We used to have actually like a pyramid looking monkey bar set up, and it was the same thing. It was like 3% of our clients could actually do it because going up with moving bars just was way too hard. So now we just have it flat and straight across over there. And now we've got more like 25, 30% of our clients able to go all the way across on the monkey bars, and they're seeing progression, you know, week to week, day to day, month to month. So it's really cool.
Okay, so you have some standards that you put in place for people before they jump into that type of training. Do you have some type of consistent like assessment process when people come in that you put them through to kind of see where they're at?
Yeah, we do basically like the FMS, the screening, right? And then what I'll do a lot, being a functional range conditioning mobility specialist, I'll do just a lot of assessing on the go, like when they do the warm up, when they do basic locomotive movements. I'm looking for issues with, you know, rotating joints, and do these joints go full range of motion, or do we need to work on the range of motion before we start putting them under load? So that's what I'll do. But most of our coaches, they just run them through your basic FMS, and then we annotate from there, and then start delivering programming, and then coaching them along with that to reduce or get rid of any sort of issues that might have transpired or showed it their face in the FMS. And then we do, for every progression, we do your basic, you know, either five rep max with load or without load, pull. So it's either pull up or like a inverted row. And then we'll do a run one or a one max set. So it's either under load or body weight. You know, what can you do? We do basic push-up, basic dip, and usually the dip is under load. We'll do it like an overhead press. We'll do a front squat. So whether it's kettlebell, they can choose kettlebell or barbell or any other implement if they want to, like a sandbag or something. And the front, if you can do a front squat, you can do a back squat, right? It takes a little bit more, right? Body awareness, a little bit more body control to do that. And then we'll do a basic pull like deadlift, whether it's, again, kettlebell, or they can do our hex bars, or they can do our barbell. So they kind of choose on that. And those are kind of our basic metrics. And then we have our aerobic metrics, which is 1 minute on the VersaClimber, how many feet can you go? And then we'll do a how fast can you do. And they do this one on their own.
Mike wants to do that forever. Before we leave. He wants to do 1 minute max feet on the VersaClimber.
Or how fast you can do a mile.
He wants to not warm up at all before he does it.
Yeah.
All right, here we go.
That's the best.
That's
the best. The first time I did that, I'll stand behind him and whip him. It took me a whole day to like be able to walk. I was like, this is ridiculous.
Oh, shit.
What did I just get?
I heard it's one of the best conditioning tools.
Oh, yeah. It's
amazing.
It's terribly awesome.
Horrible.
Or awesomely horrible.
I've never used one.
Dude.
I don't know how I've gotten to this point without hopping on one. I do know how. I weightlifted. Just avoided conditioning.
You decided, no, I'm not going to do that.
Yeah, they're great. You throw them in the same category as rowing or
Aerodyne
sprints. It's kind of like you're saying earlier, it's concentric only. Just burn yourself into the ground metabolically, especially if you're doing super hard intervals. 1 minute on that thing at 100% would fucking wipe me out.
Oh, yeah. Every time. Absolutely.
How do you look at when somebody comes in, their sort of rotational plane movement? I know you were just mentioning some of the sagittal frontal things that you're getting basic diagnostics on, but how is it? I know a lot of coaches in this space are starting to really understand like this, if you're coaching people in any way or you're a fitness practitioner, this needs to be balanced out. So the things that you're talking about, I'm assuming are hitting with some degree of resonance with anybody that's listening to the show right now.
Yeah.
But as a master coach, what are you looking for when you see people rotate and twist early when they come in? Do you look for an imbalance side? Are you able to spot the balance side to side? Or is that something you see on the rope itself or when you put a kettlebell in hand and say, do a wood chop with it?
Yeah, the rope is the easiest way to see it. You see it in the wave.
Mm-hmm.
You'll see one side's way stronger than the other. And then a lot of times then you'll look at them and you'll realize that they're not even really rotating cleanly. They're like doing this diagonal thing, right, where they're using almost like triple extension to create their rotation. So let's try to make it smooth and clean across. And then you realize one side rotates way further than the other side. One side has way more power than the other side. But then it makes sense because you ask them, what did you do in high school and college? Oh, as a pitcher. Okay, of course. Of course, that's going to be the case. You're going to be so asymmetrical. So for us, obviously, asymmetries, it's not if, it's when you get injured. But knowing that, it's like, okay, I'm going to just try to mitigate that asymmetry as much as possible, but I'm probably never going to be able to eliminate it. But if I'm aware of it and if the client's aware of it and we're slowly
progressing towards
progressing, then the chance for injury is dramatically decreased. I'm not going to say it's not going to happen.
Sure.
Obviously, that can always happen. But once you're aware of it, then now you can start coaching that and guiding with that knowledge.
Okay.
Yeah.
Copy.
Work. Yeah, I think we're going to get in and watch. You're going to teach us some stuff with the ropes.
Heck yeah.
And then if you're watching this, you already saw it because I think we're going to put it at the beginning. Or maybe we'll put it at the end. We'll throw it around. Where can people find more about you?
So if you go Battle Rope Exercises on Instagram is a good one, and then Battle Rope Exercises on Facebook, that's where you're going to see all the workshops that I'll be doing. You may or may not see Equinox if they allow me to go public. They have the choice. They can either make it private for only their trainers or public for other trainers around the area. But you could check out Equinox for that. And then obviously Onnit Academy, if you check out Onnit Academy, and just look up Battle Ropes, you're going to see, any of the certifications that I'm doing with them or for them. And then of course, obviously Innovative Results. You can check us out, at Innovative Results on Instagram or Innovative Results on Facebook.
Or at the Kettlebell World Championships.
WAKSC, Kettlebell World Champions, Orange Kettlebell Club. Got me into that whole sport, that whole thing, and we're hosting it next year, last weekend in February, again. And there was 500 people this time. almost 500 lifters lifting, which is pretty incredible, from I think it was 26 different countries around the world. So next year is promising to be even bigger. So if you want to watch paint dry for 10 minutes, no, I'm just kidding.
So excited.
No, if you want to watch, if you know what they're doing, right? If you just pick up a kettlebell and try to lift it a couple of times, you realize how freaking hard it is to do that for 10 minutes straight.
Yeah. Well, an example, what's the toughest competition you do with kettlebells? How much do you weigh?
What was the record you set?
So the record, I did 2 years ago, I attained master of sport in all three lifts. I was the first American, first U.S. athlete to do it in all three lifts. So jerk, snatch, and long cycle in the same competition. And so my jerk numbers were 84. My snatch numbers were 137. And then my long cycle numbers were 64. And so that's with a 32, either the jerk or the long cycle was 232 kilogram kettlebells. And then snatch is 132 kilogram kettlebell. You can't set it down. If you set it down, you're done. With a snatch, you get one hand switch.
Finish him.
So the long cycle, you have a 70-pound kettlebell in each hand, and you do a swing clean.
Yep.
Jerk. And you did how many reps with
so
that
it's weight? 64 with that weight.
So 64 yeah. reps in a row with two 70-pound kettlebells.
You didn't set them down.
Yeah. Didn't
you rest. You rest.
You rest,
rest
in
anywhere.
This position.
You can rest anywhere, yeah, but rest none of it's really resting.
No, you're not. Yeah.
You're just not moving.
Yeah. You just kind of rest here to kind of like rest the paws a little bit.
Yeah.
Like just a wounded pterodactyl. Yeah. Just. Yeah.
You just F my life. Why am I doing this?
Yeah. And then you go.
And then you do it again.
That's beast.
Yeah.
Pain. Yeah. Love it. Thanks for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Hey, Ron.
Hey, Ron.
Yeah.
Yeah, thanks, Aaron.